What is happening, Coach Ishak of HockFit Coaching and Legion Athletics, and your host for today's episode of Anabolic Radio? Do we have quite a treat for you guys? I'm joined by Brandon Kemper, who's the owner and head coach of BK Conditioning. If you're unfamiliar with BK Conditioning, their primary focus is, you know, bodybuilding and contest preparation. And I'm not too sure, do you work with general population clients?
As a start, man, thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. No, at the moment I don't work with general population. I focus solely on physique athletes, and to be really specific, within that market, my focus is on natural physique athletes, particularly within bodybuilding and figure. So it's kind of a niche within a niche within a niche. So
nice, man. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast, taking the time out of your day. And I know we're going to have a great discussion, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to take a lot of value out of this episode.
I've been looking forward to this one, absolutely. So thank you very much for having me.
Cool, man. So to start this off, well, for those of you listening, me and Brandon, we're primarily going to base this episode around everything we can contest prep, right? That being setting up a contest prep, you know, managing it as you diet down, nutritional periodization, and strategies for peak week. And to start this off, you know, me personally, I do have a few foundations in regards to setting up a successful contest prep. First and foremost, like optimizing general health is probably the first and foremost most important thing before a contest prep begins. But to add on, like, another important variable is like your starting body composition, right? It's probably one of the biggest reasons why it's important to establish like a rapport with your coach ahead of time. But in your experience, like, and what you focus on with BK Conditioning in regards to foundations, do you have any foundations you like to follow, like, generally in regards to setting up a contest prep?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way I kind of approach building a physique athlete is we essentially have sort of four individual components in terms of nutritional periodization for the athlete. And the biggest and potentially most important foundation piece within that is the off season. And obviously that, for the purpose of a physique athlete, by my definition, is sort of based around three predominant pieces. You know, one is, yes, we want to put on as much lean mass as possible. Within that, in the same vein, is obviously optimizing symmetry and proportion. And then the final piece is, as you mentioned, ensuring an optimal status of health. And the big thing I put forward to anyone looking to get into physique sports is that getting to the level of conditioning as required to be competitive on today's stage is not inherently a healthy process. However, our goal as coaches as athletes is to do so in the healthiest way possible. And foundation of that is obviously starting the preparation with an optimal status of health. The last thing you want to do is take out your race car and put it in a competitive race when it's running on 3 out of 4 cylinders. It's never going to end up maximally competitive, and the same goes for your body. So, aside
strong
from that,
analogy. Sorry to cut you off. Strong analogy.
Simple analogy, and I think it would resonate with a lot of people. And then obviously within that, yes, we need to ensure that we've got an appropriate starting position in terms of proportional volumes of body fat in particular. And that's a really big piece for us. Obviously, with today's level of conditioning, it's a lot of stress to take your body into those body composition realms. So the last thing we want to have to do is to mobilize excessive volumes of fat mass in relatively short time points. So for me, I'd like to have most athletes within sort of anywhere from, I'd say, 25 to maximum 30 weeks striking distance to today's level of conditioning, which for most people, probably on a percentage of body mass is, you know, hopefully within 10 to 15%. However, it's individual dependent in that, you know, you're going to have individuals that need to sit at higher body fat percentages through the off season to feel normal, optimize training performance, etc. And others who are what I would consider greyhounds, where they stay relatively lean through the off season, hence perhaps can manage shorter preparations because they don't have to lose so much total fat mass.
Yeah, guys, if you've never seen any of his clients, they come in absolutely nasty, shredded alien shreds for show day, especially, like, you know, Brandon himself. He has some pretty alien shreds. We'll put up a picture if you're watching up on YouTube. If you're listening, you got to go. That's another reason why you got to check him out on Instagram. And great points, man. Great points. So in your opinion, do you place any sort of like, let's say, large emphasis on starting body composition? Because obviously, like, that's a huge factor when it comes to the beginning of a contest prep.
Yes, absolutely. Look, I definitely place a lot of focus on it. I'm really big on doing pre-preparatory phases if necessary. And I tend to have to do this quite frequently with new athletes, in that a lot of new athletes, the first time they go on stage or endeavor to do so, don't really realize how much fat mass they need to lose. You know, I'm sure you've experienced it yourself, where you tell a first-time athlete, hey, you're going to weigh around this amount on stage, and they look at you and go, ha, there's no way, I want to be 100 kilos. And you're like, hey, mate, get it. So first-time competitors in particular, or off-season competitors coming off extended long, you know, off-seasons, I often run a pre-preparatory phase. And that pre-preparatory phase is usually anywhere from sort of 10 to 11 months out, where we basically do a quick clean-up, call it a mini cut or extended fat loss phase, to sort of establish a nice starting position. Because again, the participating in a moderate to long-term caloric deficit as required to get lean is a taxing endeavor. The last thing you want to do is make it harder on yourself by starting in a subpar position, because it's, as I describe comp prep, it's an abrasive endeavor. It's like if you run water over stone for long enough, you'll eventually erode the stone. And the same goes with comp prep. Like, come and live a day in my shoes shredded. No, that's easy. Come and do it for 7 months. Okay, that's hard. So you want to make that process as easy as possible, because regardless, it's going to present with its unique challenges.
Yeah, guys, if you're unfamiliar with the anything related to contest prep, it's definitely something that's taxing not only on you physiologically, but psychologically, right? And especially when it comes to your hormones, right? Like your leptin, your ghrelin, your thyroid, all those hormones, they take a major hit when you're in a calorie deficit, when you're in an energy restricted state for extended periods of times. And in regards to nutritional periodization, are you a fan of implementing like things like refeeds and diet breaks throughout a fat loss phase?
I would say I'm definitely a fan of it. And obviously how we formulate that and approach it is on a very, very much an individual basis. But essentially, the way I approach getting an athlete in a comp shape is that, as you know, we're trying to balance our controllable nutrition and training variables to allow for optimal trainability and recoverability whilst participating in an obligatory hypercaloric environment. So we know that dieting by default is not conducive to optimizing training performance nor recovery. So as a product, so within that, we're trying to obviously direct our macronutrients daily in accordance with providing best training performance, optimize our food selections in terms of micronutrients, etc., meal timing, frequency, all that fun stuff. And then within that, looking at a longer time point, we're obviously trying to periodize our nutrition in a way to retain that training performance and try to mitigate where possible the negative adaptation. So I shouldn't say negative, the rather intelligent internal adaptation that occurs in dieting, as crap, so to speak, as those adaptations are from a perspective of keeping you going, they're really intelligent from a survivability standpoint. So to answer your question, absolutely, refeeds, I would say a borderline a standardized inclusion, but there are occasions where perhaps we might omit them if it is affecting adherence negatively. So again, looking at it on a client-per-client basis. Obviously, the magnitudes of which we increase caloric intake compared to the dieting days and the durations of which we keep it elevated, whether it's 24-hour, 48-hour, is dependent on the athlete, how they respond, and the timeline we have in place in terms of their rate of progression. And the same goes when it comes to running deload periods in comp prep from a training perspective, and also running diet breaks. Because when and where possible, they're a great inclusion, but there are going to be occasions when you're assessing on a case-by-case basis where you just don't have the opportunity to do that because, you know, something's happened in the timeline or with this athlete, for example.
Yeah, and there's so much individual context that goes into this, guys, right? Because we could calculate an estimated rate of loss, but, you know, more often than not, like, big picture of things, fat loss isn't always linear. And you're going to have some weeks where you average a loss. You're going to have some weeks where you don't average a loss. And just it's important to remain objective at that or of that, especially as you begin to diet down. And So when it comes to, let's say, like plateaus, how they're totally misunderstood because it's, it's a normal biological response, right? And if you really think about it, like our ultimate goal should sort of be to plateau, and it's very backwards thinking because like as soon as we induce a deficit, we think that fat loss is always going to be linear. You know, we see a few lines, we see some new lows, but in actuality, that isn't the case because progress is going to undulate. So do you have any tips or tricks that you like to implement with your athletes? Let's say, for example, when they're not progressing in the fashion you'd like let's say you're going to check their adherence or.
Oh, look, absolutely. I mean, as you mentioned, plateaus are an inevitable part of dieting in that we are dealing with this wonderfully adaptive dynamic equilibrium that is one's metabolism. So there's always going to be a decline in or a reduction in that energy gap over time to the point in which perhaps, yes, we do stall for progress. And that, as you have likely experienced, predominantly occurs towards the back end. I think most of that endocrine adaptation pertain to adaptive thermogenesis and perhaps decreases in habitual NEAT occurs when we go from being pretty lean to being really lean. And that's where most people experience all those side effects in terms of just becoming more subconsciously lazy, dragging your feet, tripping over and that sort of thing because your energy conservation tactics kick in. And when we do stall out, obviously the first thing we'll do is, I call it checking your system for leaks. And this is the metaphor that I use. When I talk to my athletes about checking the system for leaks, they always go, I know exactly what you're talking about. And what I'm referring to is essentially looking at your nutritional intake and ensuring there's nothing additional that's not specifically tracked towards our macros or included within our nutrition plan, dependent on the mode of nutritional application. Because, of course, if we know exactly what's going in, there's no leaks to that system, and we're estimating our energy expenditure by, or at least we've got a good general grip of our consistency within our controllable variables of training and maybe tracking steps, etc., then we can direct body composition with quite some specificity. And if we are stalling out despite perfect nutritional adherence, then of course we'll reevaluate our nutrition and training methodology. And if we've got the time in place, and they're starting to feel the negative effects of dieting in terms of trainability, recovery, overall mood, etc., then we may look at potentially putting in place a diet break. Alternatively, if that's not an option due to time, or the athlete is feeling absolutely fantastic, then we may potentially take a more aggressive approach. And there's definitely a time, I will say, where despite the fact that we could, in theory, calculate an energy deficit to induce a very specific rate of loss. Again, we're working with a dynamic system, and there's definitely a point in preparation where you need to make nutritional alterations that far exceed calculated norms to induce a response because those adaptive components are so regulated.
Mm. Awesome points, man. Awesome points. Yeah, and I love when you say, getting to the last 10 pounds – It wasn't that hard, but getting those last 10 pounds off is like, it's like you're in a zombie mode, you're tired, you're sick of dieting, you have food focus. Do you do anything personally when it comes to, let's say, like managing hunger? Like a big part of it is like being headstrong, right? Because it's bound to occur at some point. And this is why having like really, really good mental fortitude and staying focused with the goal at hand is a very important thing that will keep you on track. But obviously, like hunger management strategies, like let's say prioritizing higher volume foods or being more on top of nutrient timing, for example. Do you have any specifics you focus on with your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. I can give you some insight. As a start, I love what you mentioned before about the last few pounds being the most challenging point. And I can definitely relate to that both in personal anecdotal myself and with my athletes. And the way I always describe it is no matter who you are, no matter what methodology from a nutrition and training perspective that you employ, eventually you will pay your dues to the diet. And it's something that I think a lot of first-time competitors struggle with because, as I mentioned, it's an abrasive endeavor. And a lot of people, when they first get into comp prep, that all they're trying to do is find a way around the hardship. Now, our goal is to make it as easy as possible, but there comes a point where you just need to embrace the crappy moment and just drive through it. There's just no way around it. And hunger is definitely, to quite an extent, an inevitable part. I mean, those long-term anorexigenic hormone, I mean, the primary long-term anorexigenic hormone, that being leucine, is chronically downregulated at the back end of a preparation, in which case, even when you're stimulating those neural biofeedback systems in the gut through the optimization of minimally processed volume-based foods, it helps with hunger management, yes, but you're still hungry. I remember I could eat, you know, a big meal, 600 grams of vegetables for dinner, sit down with my stomach sitting right out the front, I hardly flex my abs, and still be sit down and go, all right, I'm still hungry. So definitely it's an integral part of it. And what I do with my athletes is I try to associate those internal cues in a positive way. In that, this is very oversimplified, but, you know, once we've exhausted those basic pieces like optimizing food volume, managing meal frequency, timing, etc., then it does come down to a mental side of things. And the way I like to think of it, again, very oversimplified, is by delving into logic. Why am I hungry? Well, I'm hungry because I'm in a calorie deficit and that my internal energy stores are very low. Okay. Well, is being in a calorie deficit conducive to my goals of getting insanely shredded? Yes, it is. Okay, cool. Well, now perhaps we can start to associate hunger in a positive light. Hunger is good. Hunger means dieting effect. It's not that simplistic, but I find embracing a thought process like that helps you rationalize what you're doing. And for me, I find I'm a bit of a sadist, but I find a huge amount of enjoyment in doing things that are really hard. And I rival on that from a personal standpoint. I'm not saying that everyone needs to embrace that. But from a coaching perspective, yes, I would persuade where possible for people to think of it like that. On top of that, I like to really promote the breaking down of goals. Okay. So even from a training perspective, you know, macro cycles to to metacycles, to micro cycles of training sessions, movements, sets, reps, etc. The same thing with nutrition, in that, I at the back end would tell my athletes to take it literally day by day, and then break it down further and take it meal by meal. You wake up at X o'clock, goal number one, eat that meal. Goal number two, make it to 3.5 hours or whatever time point in reference till the next meal. Consume that, make it to the next meal. And that in itself can really help, because sometimes when you're looking down the barrel of the last 5 weeks, it's like, oh my God, that's a mountain that's just too tall to climb. But if you break it down, you can easily kind of, you know, work through it, or more easily at least.
You could salsa through it. Great points, man. Great points. And yeah, guys, like, big picture of things, you also got to remember that you are putting yourself through this process, right? And like, when you think about it, you compare dieting to actual suffering or actual hardship. It's literally, it's nothing. It's nothing. There's people like, seriously, they are starving, not because they want to, right? And you're actually still eating meals that you enjoy, and, you know, you kind of put some care into. So, you know, being thankful and appreciative, and like, you're just realize that you're blessed in the big picture of things. And, it's not that hard. It's not that tough. It seems that tough at the time, because your hormones are all over the place and your food focus is all over the place, but you could get through it if you're listening to this and you're contest prepping headstrong. But yeah, man, big picture of things, 100% great points. Now, when it comes to peak week, do you have a preferred approach you like to take? I know that's super individual, right? There's different types of peaking. There's linear load, there's a back load, there's a rapid back load. But if you had the ideal scenario, which one would you gravitate towards? And like, I guess the goals for peak week always stay the same, right? Like, maximizing glycogen stores, minimizing stress, minimizing muscle damage. But the mic is yours.
Well, I mean, I'll give you some insight. I mean, as you mentioned, I think the first thing when it comes to peak week formulation is essentially, you know, understanding your immediate goals within that phase. And they're exactly as you mentioned. Number one is maximizing muscle glycogen saturation. You know, within that, we need to promote recovery, so downing our stress response as a product of potentially deloading. Within that, We obviously reduce muscle damage because that tends to attenuate glycogen synthesis. And we know that by decreasing the stress response, generally a body that's under less stress slash is quote unquote healthier tends to present in a better fashion. So in terms of the method that I would employ, it's obviously very unique to the individual. As you mentioned, there's some different styles there. We've got back load, front load, potentially something more longitudinal, like a linear load. And I don't necessarily conform to a specific type of peaking or means of peaking, because I obviously do this on an individual basis. And I'd base this on a couple of things. One is the previously accumulated data through the preparation in terms of their response to higher carbohydrate feedings like refeeds. In addition to that, I'd also consider the conditioning of the athlete, in that it's their first show and we're probably just a bit shy of conditioning. Perhaps I want an additional few days in a deficit by putting in place a backload. Whereas if I had an individual that was ready ahead of time, perhaps would increase their calories in the final few weeks as a means of reducing the calorie deficit, then by default, I'm going to be increasing their stress recovery pool or their stress recovery capacity. In addition to that, I will be influencing their muscle glycogen in a positive manner. So if I had to say what would be absolutely ideal, I would say it'd be to have an athlete that's quote unquote ready a little bit ahead of the show, and then have the capacity to increase their calories systematically in the final anywhere from sort of 7 to 14 days leading in the show. I would prefer personally a more gradual approach rather than extreme approach, because I think there's inherently less risk of a response that you're not catering for. I want to, control those, modulate those controllable variables in a systematic manner that allows me to assess the response, with ease.
Mm. Mm.
Now, I don't know if that gave you a whole lot there, but I would say yes. A bit more of a linear approach would be my general go-to. However, that doesn't always occur. And there is definitely occasions where, particularly in back-to-back shows, where I potentially employ a backloading strategy as well.
Great points, man. Great point. Now, when it comes to peak week, one of the foundations is to minimize stress, right? As much as possible, and keep stress low, decrease the physiological stressors. And this is going to help control cortisol, which can contribute to the cosmetic look on show day. In your personal experience, how much do you think that, someone's stress or cortisol can impact the final look on show day?
I think it definitely has a profound look. Obviously, we don't have the capacity to dig into any literature on this topic because no one wants to research it, and then B, it'd be very hard to measure the quantitative measurement of peaking and how and control those variables. It'd be impossible. But I would say an anecdote that it certainly has an effect. I mean, we know that chronic elevation of cortisol is not good, and once you've bound that cortisol to all of the receptors it's specifically coded for, then it has a partial affiliation to mineralocorticoid receptors, and they tend to influence obviously fluid retention. Based off that premises, I would say, and what I've seen, I would say, yeah, it can definitely have an effect. And generally speaking, you will see trends, I think, with athletes who are really quite relaxed on a show day that tend to present really well in a really predictable manner. And I think that specific to the actual show day itself, a really important piece is to be chill. It's essentially manage your level of arousal when you need it. If you've come to the show, get there early, reduce your stress, put your feet up, put your earphones in, get some slow jam going, chill out. Okay, we're getting to pump up. Okay, cool, let's get this arousal up with perhaps the introduction of some caffeine. Let's maybe put some heavier music on and let's start to wind on. Okay, we're going from prejudging to the night show. We don't need to be on right now, let's chill out again. So I'm really big on being conscious of modulating your level of arousal for when you need it. On the day itself.
Great points, man. Great points. Now, in the big picture of things, like I'm an advocate of IIFYM, I don't really want to call it IIFYM because I prescribe macros and I give you guidelines, and for my clients, they make the decision based on their preference. But big picture of things, like how much do you think food selection can impact not only like dieting down, but peak week, right? And this one's always funny because you have ex-competitors sticking to the same, more or less the same food throughout their competition prep, foods that are, let's say, hypoallergenic to the gut, right? Foods they're familiar with, and come show day, they bombard their GI with highly processed foods or quote unquote like cheat meals that could obviously like they can contribute to bloating and issues with overall digestion.
I mean, look, there's probably a couple questions in there. I mean, in the actual comp prep itself, as you know, when it comes to the mode of application, whether it be a flexible approach or a fixed approach, I don't necessarily conform to one. I think they both have pros and cons. I will say that I am definitely a big advocate for a flexible approach, particularly throughout an off season, in that that's the longest phase. And in order to have long-term application, I think having control of one's nutrition is important and be able to modulate the food selections. However, on the same vein, I will say that I'm probably quite pro a fixed approach in the final leg of a competition preparations. And essentially that comes down to two reasons. One is minimizing our cloud of variance, noting that, you know, different food selections do have a different volume of metabolizable energy depending on how processed or non-processed they are. So as well as obviously potential inaccuracies in one's tracking if they're not actually using really good entries in MyFitnessPal. So minimizing the cloud of variance towards the end is obviously important. The better we can control that, the more strategically we can assess the result and make logical manipulations in the follow-on. In addition, decision fatigue is, I think, is a real problem at the end of a comp prep. For me personally, I maintain a big client load at the back end. I don't want to think about the other thing. I want to free up my headspace for my athletes, which I'm exceptionally focused on. And then as we get into comp, you know, the back end into peak week, I definitely consider food selections in that we have some generalized rules. You know, number one is obviously we don't want to be introducing anything that we haven't consumed in quite some time that we believe could contribute to any gastrointestinal stress. In addition to that, we obviously want to be, I suppose, strategic in modulating gastrointestinal volume by obviously reducing fibrous foods towards the back end, particularly in the final 48 hours. In that particular time, I'm going to really make a swift recommendation towards food selections that are very easily processed and of very low volume. And then on show day, I follow a very similar focus in that we get adequate protein and we taper our volumes of food down, not necessarily the carbohydrate volumes, but I'm talking about the actual food volume itself as we get closer to show. Yeah.
That was great. That was awesome, man. Good points. Good points. And all good points. Now, when it comes to, let's say, for example, post-competition, obviously this is of high importance, right? And biggest reason why like a lot of diets fail out there, a lot of fat loss phases, fail because the majority of people, like, they plan for fat loss, they don't necessarily plan for the period of recovery after. And do you lean more towards, and I guess like both approaches have a specific application, right? It all depends in the context of which they're used in, but on a recovery based approach or a reverse diet approach.
Look, I'd definitely say that I definitely lean towards a recovery approach. I suppose everyone has a different definition of what a swift recovery looks like. And obviously, when we're looking at a bikini athlete, well, perhaps we don't have to restore too much fat mass to normalize endocrine function and, you know, appetite by feedback signaling. But when we are looking at the extremes in body composition as needed for bodybuilding and figure, you know, your body is not designed to have a literal 4 to 5 times the amount of lean mass to fat mass. There are going to be quite some systemic perturbations in terms of optimal functionality. And my goal is obviously to restore that as soon as possible. So number one is let's put on some fat mass, the key word being some fat mass, not all the fat mass in the world. and the specific volumes of which I'd like to induce for the athlete are obviously really specific to them. And I would usually consider where they sat in the off season. And then I'd also consider kind of their headspace as well. You know, I've got athletes that want to really stay in awesome shape for whatever. Let's say, for example, for the gram, or because they have a modeling contract. And, you know, for those guys, they're probably going to elongate their recovery with a slower approach and perhaps not optimize off-season gains by remaining a little bit leaner than they should for maybe optimal performance and recoverability. but we'll apply that for those athletes. Then for others, you know, they've got a short off season. Well, they need to make maximal productivity within that. It needs to be fast. But alternatively, on the flip side of that, they also need to maintain a pretty appreciable body composition so that they're not dieting for an excessively long duration in the next up and coming preparation. So there's always a balancing point. But I would definitely say reverse diet, or I should say recover or whatever, as fast as possible via the restoration of some fat mass to the point of which you can start to normalize or show your body that global energy availability is not compromised and start to normalize your systemic function. And as we go through that process, how long it takes, sorry if I'm blabbering on here, but how long it takes is really dependent. is really dependent on the athlete. I think it comes down to a few variables. There's no doubt genotypic variation there, but within that, there's also environmental factors, like how long did we diet, how lean did we get, and what approach we took to get there. And I will say that probably, in my experience at least, the largest contributing variable to the level of adaptation that one incurs through that time is how lean they get. The leaner you get, the more aggressive these adaptations will be, period, despite your best ability to mitigate or slow down these adaptations with, you know, strategic refeeding and diet breaks, etc. But it will take some time, and I have it's basically a 4 to 5 point questionnaire that I send through with my check-ins every couple of weeks through that phase, to basically try and get a bit of a handle as to when I think they're recovered. And this sort of encompasses some questions on there. So obviously we do some blood work occasionally. For some people we will, to look at their off, you know, compare their androgen levels, et cetera, and look at other blood health biomarkers. But in terms of subjective measures, I would say, you know, how's your appetite regulation? Are you still constantly thinking about food, et cetera? Can you actually induce a satiation response post-meal? Is your sex drive increasing, assuming that it was dramatically decreased in comp prep, which is quite likely? There's a couple other follow-on questions, which are just to give me a bit of a subjective marker in terms of their performance as well. And when all of those, they're saying yes to all of my 4 to 5 questions, which is could be anywhere from sort of 6 to 12 weeks post-show, I'm going to go, okay, this is now where we're in the, you know, a really productive position to make the most of the follow-on off-season.
Great points, man. Great points, 1,000%. So how you intend to recover from a contest prep or extended deficit is totally going to depend on the context of your situation. But when we look at things like metabolic adaptations, which in actuality is like it's a survival mechanism, it's the process in which our body increases energy expenditure as a means of slowing down fat loss. But the fastest way to go about recovery is not only increasing your calories, but like you said, you know, gaining back a little body fat along with that at an appropriate rate, right? Not gaining all the body fat in the world. But great points, man. Now, you personally, how has your off season been going, or how has your recovery been going? You feel like you're fully recovered?
I sound pretty close to it at this point. I dare say that this is probably the most, pardon me, I say probably the best that I've managed the recovery phase. Generally speaking, as I mentioned, I'm very much pro a swift recovery. And in the past, I've likely overshot that a little bit too far and perhaps got a little bit too cuddly, so to speak. In this scenario, I think from a personal standpoint, you know, I've prepared for multiple seasons now. And it's just got a little bit better each time. So this time, I think I found a nice peaking axis between putting on the requisite volume of fat mass to regulate my body in terms of, you know, normalistic endocrine function, appetite regulation, etc., whilst obviously keeping my fat mass in a position where I've now got a bit of a what I call a fat mass buffer to really commence the off-season. So the last thing I want to do is be 8 weeks post-show and be already at my top-end off-season fat mass, because then where do I go? We know there's going to be some obligatory fat gains for the advanced athletes we commence the off season. I want to make sure that I can get a good kind of 8 to 10 months of straight gaining from the back end of that comp season without having to mini cut. So yeah.
Awesome points. Yeah. Everybody wants to mini cut, or this is so multifactorial, but a lot of people like they fixate on the food factor so much that when post-show comes around, they just stuff their face. but that turns into something for weeks on end, right? And it just start. It's such a shitty way to have a productive start to your off season, because reality is you most likely won't recover for like 16 plus weeks. And that's like hormonally, like getting your training back to a productive spot, or gaining back any lost lean tissue that you may, or gaining back any lost lean tissue. Like, so many factors that play a role into this. But just to put,
just to put two more pieces in there, I will say that as a, in general, female endocrinology is way more aggressively effective in terms of achieving today's level of conditioning. Doesn't matter if you're male or female, there's going to be some unfortunate adaptation, but females are generally more aggressively affected. And I would say that that recovery period from the perspective of regulating normalistic menstrual cycle, so eumenorrhea, is probably going to take a considerable duration. So I suppose men by comparison are, I suppose, a bit more robust in that regard. Yes, we're going to experience decreases in sex hormones, but it's likely, again, I haven't looked into the literature specifically in comparison, but it's likely that we're going to rebound a bit quicker. In addition to that, I'll also mention that no one's perfect in a reverse diet. I'm sure you and I can both say that. You know, I can say I finished my show in Portland in the US and I went straight to this sandwich bar, and it was the best sandwich I had in my whole life. I ate this sandwich and then I looked at my partner, and it was about 20 minutes after, I just looked at her and went, I am so sick. Like, that delayed satiation was just so long after. And I had a whole lot of gastrointestinal issues for a couple of days as a product of that. No one's perfect. But you're right. You know, if that excessive eating behavior extends for weeks and weeks, okay, that's when we're going to have some problems. Definitely.
Yeah, guys, don't feel guilty about going out and enjoying yourself, and like, you literally busted your ass for this big day, this big show day, right? Like, go out, enjoy yourself. You know, if you have a coach, communicate with your coach. And if they're a good coach, they should have a plan of recovery for you. So don't sweat it. And yeah, man, great point. So your off season has been progressing good, and we just spoke about females. Do you notice any major difference in regard? Well, there's a major difference, but let's say like in your specific approach when it comes to dieting down females or recovery for females.
Yeah. I mean, look, yes, to a degree, in that the way I describe it, like working with men and women, is that, you know, from a biological standpoint, the same rules apply in terms of, the rules of thermodynamics, etc. It's just that with a female, I would take perhaps a slightly less aggressive approach, in that as a start, they have to be in a good position in terms of starting point, because I don't want to have to diet anything excessive off them. Because to be more aggressive for a female means that they are on poverty macros, and that means you're going to have a few issues there. Yes, there's a lesser total opportunity to accumulate, you know, appropriate micronutrients, and that's pretty challenging to work with in the back end. And on top of that, their endocrinology is much more aggressively affected in terms of in the face of low energy availability. So I would generally want them in a really good starting position, and I'll usually factor in what I consider potentially a longer timeline in terms of bringing them into stage, because I don't want to have to thrash them too much. Mind you, the same rules apply for men. You don't want to have to thrash them, but you've got more of a more leeway. If your male client goes really hard in the last 2 weeks of his off season, some silly reason puts on 3 kilos of fat mass, you're like, I can probably catch this up in the timeline. The female does that, it's like, you need to do next season, because, you know, ethically, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to, you know, break you trying to get you to stage.
Yeah, guys, a lot of great points, and there's a lot of foundations in regards to not only optimizing general health, but optimizing energy balance, optimizing your nutrition. So consuming a sufficient amount of micronutrients, phytonutrients, essential fatty acids, all these things are going to help keep you, quote unquote, healthy, you know, as you diet down to those lean levels of, or those low levels of body fat. And now, building off on this, recovery for females, I would say, is a little bit harder. Because for males, you know, we're in a position to where we could say, hey, you know, it's the off season. Sure, I am a little bit more fluffy, but like I perform like 10 times better. And, you know, you could obviously like push your body weight past its whatever set point. And like you said, you do have that buffer to kind of, you know, even if you go to like 25%, for example, you know, it's okay because you could diet down. But for females, they're not really in a position to where they could say, oh, you know, it's the off season, blah, blah, blah.
But women, I think women definitely have a harder time in the reverse diet for a couple of reasons. I mean, number one is because they exhibit lower levels of total muscle mass. When they put on that fat mass, it has more of a profound effect on their look. Okay, so men can put on that 5 kilos of fat mass. They still look in the mirror like, eh, my abs are a bit, you know, wishy-washy, but I still have cat delts. Whereas a woman puts on 5 kilos of fat mass and on a percentage of her total body mass, that's probably 30% more, and she has no delts anymore. So that's, and on top of that, you know, men and women at the end of their comp prep tend to exhibit similar levels of body fat in order to be competitive, right? Except a man can maintain a lower percentage of total body mass, fat mass, you know, and exist in a healthy manner. Women need higher body fat percentages, which is another argument for potentially a longer preparation for females, because in a percentage of their total body mass going from something that's quote unquote healthy to that bottom end conditioning, that's a longer distance to travel with a system that's more delicate in terms of its response to a hypoenergetic environment. And on top of that, I think men from a psychological standpoint jump on the scale, see that weight increase, and it can be quite positively taken on board. I'm getting jacked. This is great. Women are much more inclined to get on the scales, and I'm making a very big generalization here. And for the females listening, I do apologize if you don't have this view. But a lot of women get on that scale and go, oh, I went up 500 grams this week. I'm getting fat. It's only occasional that I have a woman that jumps the scale and goes, ah, I'm scales going up, I'm getting jacked. And that's essentially the mentality that eventually we want to work our way towards as you go into the off season. Because of course, I actually did a post on this recently that you know, we've got to transition from eating for aesthetics in comp prep to eating for performance in the off season. And that takes a big shift. That's a big change of mentality. Like, you know, for 7 months of your life, all you've done is eat for aesthetics, eat to get shredded. All of a sudden it's like, okay, I need to eat for an alternate function. That's massive.
Yeah, guys, when you're in a period of recovery, like focusing on your performance is so imperative, right? And especially like getting it back to the position it was in before you even started a contest prep. And I found like things like not looking at myself like frequently, because like muscle growth is slow. It's so slow and it's hard. And I guess you could say, oh, it's super individual, right? There's a lot of people who could put on muscle easier, but like the more advanced you get, the harder it is to put on some quality muscle. And in the big picture of things, like you can't consistently have these contest preps or, you know, competing year after year. Because one, you need to recover. And two, if you're a natural athlete, your main goal is to make improvements in your physique. You may potentially need an extended off season in order to make those improvements. Do you have any thoughts on, let's say, the off season, or do you have a minimum, let's say, time you like to aim for that you spend in a surplus?
Look, I definitely have some generalized ratios that I'll employ. I will say there are occasions where I break these rules, depending on the athlete and their individual circumstances. But as a general rule, I like to employ a 2-to-1 ratio when it comes to competition preparation time to off season. So obviously in today's stage, let's say for example, you diet for 25 weeks. Well, that would usually translate looking at a 1-to-2 ratio of 50 weeks of off season plus the next competition preparation. So that would be approximately 18 months between stages a minimum. Now, obviously this applies to the advanced athlete that gets into phenomenal shape. So we're talking, you know, into striated glutes, etc. If we're looking at a beginner athlete that has capacity to put on lean mass at an accelerated rate because they're still very, very sensitive to resistance-based training stress, and didn't get very lean in their previous show, well, those systemic adaptations weren't very extreme from the diet, don't need much recovery, and they could put on lean mass really quickly. So perhaps they could diet, you know, for shows with a bit more frequency. However, on the flip side of that, one could argue that they're in a really fertile position to grow, they should spend more time in the off-season. So it's a matter of perspective there. But generally, 2-to-1 ratio, I think, is ideal. And it's something that I've adhered to quite religiously myself, in that I have done year-to-year shows before, but generally speaking, I'll take 2 years, or in last scenario, 3 years. 3 years is probably a bit overkill. I did that for other reasons as well, to focus on my athletes, etc. But that's a general recommendation. But like I said, I do have occasions where I have people do back-to-back seasons. It's very, very body hard, and it's very mentally hard. As you know, your appetite regulation is so sensitized, and if you haven't had the opportunity to recover from that properly, you know, you're coming into the next prep and you're hungry from week 2 instead of week 12 of dieting. So it's not a recommended piece, but I'm happy.
Is that something major? Sorry to cut you off. Is that something major you've noticed in athletes that compete, you know, season after season, is that you have a little bit harder, harder time in regards to getting them that lean?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say I do believe it's a little bit more challenging to get lean. Now, I say believe, because this is all based on anecdote here, but I believe it's due to two things. One is adherence, a little bit more challenging, because those appetite, their appetite regulation hasn't fully recovered, which means that those adaptations pertaining to increased hunger sensitivity and delayed satiation, decreased foodborne perception, etc., tend to kick in a hell of a lot earlier in preparation. You have a 2-year off season, you're not hungry for the first half prep. Then it gets a little bit hungry, and then maybe, you know, right towards the end, you start to feel it. Whereas dieting straight away, or in close proximity to the previous bout, you're hungry from the get-go. In addition to that, those adaptive components kick in earlier, which means there's a higher probability that you need to maybe even diet with more aggression in terms of lowering calories beyond where they were previous. And that's definitely something I've experienced. So, yeah, again, in combination with a more challenging time from an adherence standpoint. So it's definitely harder. But I will say that, you know, going season to season, as in like September to May, is like very hard. Even year to year is pretty challenging. But I've had to do a lot, work with a lot more athletes going year to year in recent times because, as you're aware, federations like the WNBF, for example, tend to put rules in place with their professional athletes that in order to maintain their pro status, they must compete with a certain level of frequency, which for most is like once a year they need to compete. So, you know, in that scenario, it's like, well, we've got to kind of bounce it out as best we can.
Yeah, me personally, I'd say fuck it. I'll just go and get my pro card again. It doesn't matter. But, you know, there are people who feel otherwise. In regards to your off-season, your recovery, how is your appetite, your hunger cues? Do you feel like they've recovered?
I would say they're pretty much recovered. Pretty much. I will say that at the end of my last off-season, I was a little bit softer than I am now. Absolutely. Mm. And at that point in time, I was definitely consuming a high volume of calories. And my hunger sensitivity was absolutely in the pits. I could probably not eat till 1 o'clock and feel totally fine about it. You know, I was not hungry at all. Obviously, at the end of a preparation, I was very hungry, and despite my best intentions not to think about food, it was probably the thing that occupied my mind for the majority of the day. At this point now, I'm definitely content when I eat, my meals. You know, I feel satiated in the follow-on. It's very, you know, my sleep is totally regulated, whereas prior that increased sympathetic tone was problematic from a sleep perspective, and in conjunction with that, all I could think about was food. So things are regulated, but I'm not at that point where I'm can't eat anymore or anything like that.
Nice, man. Yeah, I found my appetite has been a little like non-existent just because of work and running around and all these different things going on in the background. But I guess that could be a good thing, right? You're a little bit more being a little bit more convenient with your meals. But yeah, man, awesome. Just some like personal questions to finish this off.
Sure.
Do you have any specific methodologies in regards to your training that you like to abide by when it comes to programming or for yourself or exercise selection for yourself or for your clients?
I mean, look, in terms of general philosophy, I'm really big on working on principles rather than adhering to one, you know, dogmatic approach. And from a coaching perspective, we'll obviously build things, build our training plans around the athlete, and then modulate, you know, based on result and subjective markers of progress, and objective markers, I should say. From a personal standpoint, I should say personally for me, I'm definitely someone that goes all in on anything and everything I do. I have a very obsessive behavior across the board, which is both productive in some ways and kind of ergolytic in others. Training for me is probably something that I'd say it's one of the most joyous portions of my day. I lead a fantastic life. I love every aspect of it, but my 2 hours in the morning is absolute bliss. And for me, I always run the risk of overtraining because if I could spend more time in the gym, I would, because I love it more than anything. It's the only time that I switch off completely. I turn my device off. I don't talk to people. I just get in there and have the best time. So from a personal standpoint, it's always something I have to be aware of. In terms of overall philosophies, I suppose to summarize, I'm big on a personal approach, principle-based, not conforming to one dogmatic approach. Within that, as a bodybuilder, I'm very big on choosing movement selections that fit one's levers, in that there's always going to be certain movements that due to one's structural anthropometry fit that athlete great and others not so. So I'm very much personal when it comes to that, and I don't conform to a set, you know, volume of movements. Everyone says, okay, great, a squat, dead, and bench are good movements for building muscle. And I go, they are great, and if you're a fully functional athlete, they feel comfortable and load the target tissue sufficiently, then they'll probably be an inclusion. However, if you're like me, and when you squat consistently, you know, it tends to be problematic on your gradiocanteric bursa. It's like, well, we could spend a huge volume of time working on that technique, or we could just divert our attention to other movements that allow us sufficient tension and overload through that are at a lower injury risk. Well, let's do that. We're a bodybuilder. So that's a general overview.
Kissing my hand like a Italian chef. That was great, man. That was fantastic. A lot of people are going to take some great jewels away from that. Do you have any personal anecdotes in regards to jewels for people just getting into this or people just starting out in regards to like contest prep, bodybuilding, the whole jazz?
Yeah, I'll look generalized. My general recommendation for anyone getting into our sport is to spend sufficient time building that base. I'd highly recommend, always as self-serving as it sounds, but get a coach. I mean, you can minimize your F around time at the start of your career. Most people, when they get a coach, they're like, yeah, I've been training for 5 years, but it's only been like 18 months seriously. They spent the first portion semi-effectively training. Whereas what we're seeing nowadays is a lot of young athletes coming into the juniors looking absolutely fantastic because they've A, started young, B, they've started training effectively from the get-go thanks to the internet, thanks to quality coaching from the start. So natural bodybuilding being the sort of accumulation of very long-term training and nutrition, you want to kind of get it right from the start. I think you can really accelerate your progression as a bodybuilder by getting educated and touching base with the right people from the get-go. In addition to that, I would always ask my athletes, or always ask someone who's getting into the sport, why they want to do it. I think that's a very, very important piece, in that if you're doing it for the right reasons, bodybuilding can be the most beautiful. I'm a little bit biased here, but it can be the most amazing thing to do. Alternatively, if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, it can be absolutely soul-destroying. So, in personal anecdote, I got into bodybuilding because I had this piece of canvas, as I'd put it, my body, and I wanted to see what I could do through the strategic modulation of training and nutrition to, you know, induce morphological change, and how extreme can we make this physique? And that was always my goal. And within that, the goal was never to maintain a stage, you know, ready physique all year round. Whereas I think a lot of people that come into it are really like, I want to look like that. and, you know, with the goal of doing it long term. And I think that's very problematic. But yeah, gives you a bit of insight.
Super problematic, especially if you're getting into this for the trophies or, you know, to take pictures on show day or blah, blah, blah. Like, all that is just a byproduct of, you know, actually enjoying the lifestyle and the journey and, you know, just stepping into your potential, right? It, like you said, it could be something that adds so much value to your life, which is what it should be, or it could be something that completely destroys you. And I've come across, you know, both types of people over the years. And yeah, man, great points. And do you have any upcoming projects or things coming up that you'd maybe like the audience to stay on the lookout for?
I'll tell you what, at the moment, my schedule is pretty basic, man. I'm really, really focused on my athletes, and the next stretch, well, as always, but the next stretch of time is really dedicated to them, and continuing to you know, exploit every bit of great potential in each of the athletes I have the honor and pleasure of working with. And that's basically where I'm at. I don't have any big projects on the horizon in terms of, you know, something that I can sort of put out to the masses at this point. I'm just focusing on my own education and then obviously transferring this to my athletes as well.
Nice, man. Nice. Awesome. And, you know, I just want to thank you for taking the time out of your day, coming on the podcast and chatting with me and letting me pick at your brain, and I genuinely appreciate it. Would love to have you on for potentially a future episode. And yeah, man, cheers. Thanks so much.
On that note, thank you so much, my friend. It's an absolute pleasure. Always appreciate having the opportunity to share my passion for bodybuilding and hopefully share some gems along the way in terms of some of the lessons that I've learned in anecdote and through my educational background. So really appreciate that. And if I do have the opportunity to come back on, I'll absolutely jump at that. So thank you very much, my friend.
Cheers. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. We'll talk soon.